Hey there, everybody. It is July the 13th, 2011, and you are listening to This Show Is So Gay. I'm Ken. As always, you can get in touch with us by dropping us an email at thisshowisogay@aol.com, strolling on over to thisshowisogay.com to learn about all the cool things happening with our little gay radio show. And of course, go to the Facebook, type in This Show Is So Gay, like us, because you know it, we like you. So on last week's show, I mentioned that I was participating in Charity Treks, a five-day, 415-mile bike ride from Montreal to Portland, Maine. By the way, it's Portland, Maine. I think I might have said Portland, Oregon last week. That's okay. People make that mistake. It's raising much-needed money for a very important cause. But hey, let's not just listen to me talk about it. Let's welcome Mark Stannis, the president of Charity Treks. Mark, welcome to This Show Is So Gay.
Well, thank you very much.
I'm doing this ride.
Yes.
And I'm not even crewing it. Normally, I crew these things. I don't bike them.
Well, that's okay.
Riders are people too, right?
Yes. And you'll have more fun doing that. It's more work being on the crew.
It is. Oh, yay. So many people don't admit that. So that was a good thing. So much to talk about. Let's start with the basics, Mark. What is Charity Treks?
Well, Charity Treks is a group of volunteers that we are predominantly, we raise money for HIV vaccine research. Mm-hmm. We also have another event that raises money for breast cancer awareness. But this ride is, this is going to be our 10th anniversary ride. And we actually have the opportunity to end up after this year raising over $1 million for AIDS vaccine or HIV vaccine research. And out of that $1 million, if we get there, 100% of it always goes to the beneficiaries.
Fantastic. Now, you said run by volunteers, except for the president, who I assume earns at least six figures doing this.
No. Huh. I am a volunteer as well. I actually work for the University of Virginia as my full-time job, and this is done in spare time, just like all the other board members.
Well, all right.
So, yes, so none of us make money off of this, and that's the main reason we started it with the way we did, where 100% of what comes in goes right back to the beneficiaries, and we do it because we love it.
Now, I heard that this ride was also born out of some of the old rides that used to take place.
Correct. There was a larger group that did very large AIDS rides and a vaccine ride. Mm-hmm. And all of the board members actually were registered for the 2002.
Yeah.
Canada-U.S. ride. And about 4 weeks before the event, we all got an email.
I remember the email.
Yes, it said, due to, unforeseen conditions or whatever, the ride's not happening. And many of us were devastated because they had a very large fundraising minimum.
Right.
That, everybody had made travel plans
right.
and raised money for this. And so a group of us started emailing each other and said, okay, show up in Montreal with $50. And we're going to make the ride happen.
Wow.
And so we were able to get a copy of the route and made some trips up there very quickly over the 3 weeks or so. And it ended up, we had 97 people show up that year. And then after that, we decided to start Charity Treks with a few differences.
Mm-hmm.
We would always keep it below 125 riders. We would never have a fundraising minimum. And 100% of what's raised for the beneficiaries goes to the beneficiaries because on the larger rides, you would always end up with only like 80% or 60% going through. And we wanted to keep it a much more low, a much more grassroots and really have it about raising money as well as raising awareness.
Now, I've said so many times on this show, for the past two summers, I've done the San Francisco to L.A. AIDS ride and,
mm-hmm.
and I've crewed that. I've been a roadie. And I wasn't able to do it this summer, and that was really difficult. So I was really happy when I stumbled across, in of course the most random way, running into someone in Brattleboro who started talking about the ride, and then within 24 hours I was signed up.
Very good.
So will I perhaps then notice some differences between the San Francisco to LA AIDS ride and Charity Treks?
Yes, there'll be a lot less people.
A little bit, yeah.
We stay at either family campgrounds,
uh-huh.
Or actually one of our riders has property at their house, and we are actually going to be camping at one of our riders' houses.
Wow.
So it's a lot of people call it, and you'll hear it this year, their August family. We have probably about 75% of the people registered this year are returning riders.
Wow.
Or returning crew. We have families that come, and this is their vacation. They use their vacation time to go on this ride. So it's a much more intimate group of people that become friends by the end of the ride if you don't know anybody. Things are scheduled, per se, but it's a much more, we're a low-maintenance group, I guess.
But difficult to describe, right? I mean, I've always struggled to describe these events, to get people to sign up for these events, and then I always hit a wall because you try to talk about what the feeling is like, and you just, you can't unless you do it. And I remember when I did my first ride, it was actually the first walk that I did. They used to do those 60-mile AIDS vaccine walks,
yeah,
which I actually really liked. I liked the 3 days. And they said on that first day, you will live these 3 days how you want to live the rest of the year. And of course, I'm a jaded New Yorker. I'm like, whatever. And then, of course, I leave the event and I'm trying to tell people, no, you live those 3 days. And I saw how it just didn't translate to anybody else. So there's this element that you can't really even describe without doing it, right?
Correct. And you have what a lot of people end up having, what we call post-ride depression, where you go back home and you try to explain the week that you've just spent with these wonderful people, yeah, that just want to make a difference. And you go back to, quote, the real world, and you just can't explain it. And you actually can get kind of depressed for a little bit because you're like, I want to go back there and, you know, be with the most positive individuals, you know, that, and you run into just random people on the ride in the small towns, and once you tell them what you're doing, they sometimes will just give you money right there and say, here, give this to the cause. So that's really what it's about. And, yeah, it's, you know, keeping it in the news because, you know, many people, you know, the younger generation especially, some people think that AIDS and HIV don't exist anymore. And it's difficult because, you know, yes, the medicines have gotten better, but there's still not a cure yet.
Right.
And I believe right now we're the only, I guess, small fundraising group that this is the only vaccine ride that's out there that's purely for a vaccine. There's many rides that I know of that have, you know, that are raising money for treatment. And I believe the California one, it raises money for multiple different groups. But, you know, it's really, for us, it's about stopping HIV from the start.
Right.
Let's find a cure and do that.
And how did you go about choosing these beneficiaries?
These were the two beneficiaries that were kind of there in the forefront. They're in the kind of what we would call the forefront of research. UCLA and Emory have been at it a long time. They both have clinical trials in process. And really, it's, you know, if we raised more money, we'd love to add other beneficiaries. But since our money that we give them is what we call unrestricted funds, mm-hmm, so they can use it for seed grants, and a seed grant may cost anywhere from $20,000 to $30,000.
Okay.
So, you know, I was just talking to Emory, to one of our riders from the Emory area, from Atlanta, and they said last year every dollar that we gave them turned into $50 of research. So they said the average is around 17 to 20 with our monies over the year, because they can use 25,000 of the money that we give them to start a seed grant. Then they can go to NIH for much larger money.
Right.
Or if they need to buy equipment, they can buy equipment. So that's where our money is a little different. And we've picked these two because that's the original beneficiaries, and we've kind of stuck with them because they really do seem to be, I know Emory in particular, I know they've got, I believe it's something, it's a stage 2 or stage 3 clinical trial right now, which we'll learn about more on the ride because the researchers from both institutions are going to be coming up on the ride for the closing ceremony.
Oh, great.
And they'll actually tell people what the money's been used for.
Now, I'll be honest with you. I guess I would be nervous if I were producing this event. I would be nervous about not having a fundraising minimum.
We thought that at first, but since all of us used to do the larger rides, we felt that it was almost you were pressuring people just to raise money and only care about the money and not really care about raising awareness and things like that. But over the years, our riders, on average, have always, the average per rider donation has been around $1,100 to $1,400. So we do have riders that, you know, we will have some riders that will raise $5,000, $10,000.
I'm not there yet.
Well, you've got a few more weeks.
All right. No, I'm trying. My goal is $5,000.
And then we'll have, you know, we'll have other people that are maybe struggling college students that don't have the friends in their network that can give that amount of money.
Right.
So if they come in and we tell everybody, try to raise $500. You know, 10 people, you know, ask them for $50, you know, or something like that. It's, you know, it can be small amounts like that, but then that person may add more to the event than money ever could because of their attitude, and then they'll talk to other people and keep things in the news.
See, I go the other route. This has always been my route of instead of getting a small number of people to give a lot, my whole thing is how many people can I get to give a small amount? And so my track for this was, hey, folks, and you can link to this off of the Show Is So Gay homepage, theshowisogay.com. I'm asking people to give $10. My goal is to get 500 people to give $10. I sent out two emails. I have like $2,200 already.
That's great.
Yeah, no,
that's the way to do it because
it's raising awareness more.
I mean, honestly, that's how I guess our politicians should do things like that too, because then more people feel involved.
Right. Now, is there still time for people to sign up and participate?
Yes, there is still time for people to sign up. We usually don't close registration until 2 or 3 days beforehand.
Okay.
And also, we always accept donations at least till October 1st.
Okay.
So that way, after the ride, people come back and they'll have pictures from the ride. Wow. They'll have, you know, all this other stuff that they, and then they can really talk about it.
This is good. I don't feel like I have to finish the 5,000.
No.
Okay.
No. You'll have plenty of time, and then after the ride, you'll have the experience that you'll be able to tell everyone about how wonderful it was, hopefully.
Because I could certainly, as the dean of students at a college, I'm sure I could threaten students' housing if they don't give the $10.
Well, of course.
Yeah.
You know.
That's college people. It's just what we do.
You know, you have to have something.
Now, I'm a little nervous. I'm not going to lie to you. I'm nervous about being a rider for the first time and not being a crew member. Although David just keeps saying to me over and over, but you could just switch over to the crew. But no, I'm too stubborn for that. If I start riding, I'm going to want to finish the riding. But I don't feel that I'm a very strong rider, Mark.
Well, that's okay. We have riders that will finish 100 miles in 5 hours. We also have other riders that we will pick them up at 7 o'clock at night and bring them into camp. But it's not about riding 100 miles. If you can get it in your mindset, you're doing a whole bunch of 15-mile rides,
mm-hmm.
then that's fine.
That's what I'm doing.
Because we have pit stops every 15 to 20 miles.
Right.
There's usually, we try to tell everybody to have music, be lively, and we tell people, you know, if you're going up a hill and you want to stop, stop. You know, and if you want to ride from pit one to pit two and then get a ride to lunch, we have no problem with that. We want people to enjoy themselves. Yes, it should be a challenge, but we don't want to make it so hard and where people are miserable at the end of the ride, because it's not really about that.
I don't want to be miserable at the
end
of the ride.
No. I mean, it will be hard. We do have people that, you know, they can be very cranky when they come into camp.
Gotcha.
But by the time they have dinner, they're usually fine.
They're fine.
You know, and they look back on it and they're like, I did that. I mean, we had 3 riders last year that had never ridden a century. They rode their first, second, and some of them rode 3 centuries last year. And they had never ridden a century before.
Mark, you know that's going to be me, right?
Well, of course. And we have 3 centuries this year. Or no, yes, we have 3 this year. Because I just finished the route.
Okay.
So, yes.
I don't think that you're really telling the right stories to maximize my participation right now.
Oh, you'll be fine. What we tell people, I live in Virginia near the Blue Ridge Mountains. So around here, if I can do back-to-back 70-mile days, that's all you need to be able to do.
All right.
So if you can do back-to-back 70-mile days before the ride, like a Saturday and Sunday before the ride, if you can do a 70 and a 70 and still be able to move the next day, you should be fine. Okay. Because you'll end up riding with people, and the day will go by so fast.
I know. I did my first group ride last night. I just had this image of me knocking the whole ride over. I couldn't get it out of my head. So, and then I got nervous because there was a point in the ride last night where I couldn't see anyone in front of me and I couldn't see anyone behind me, and I totally froze. And I thought, well, this isn't going to be an issue, though, because at some point Sweep will come and say, where are you?
Well, yes. And what we do is you'll find, you will see on the ride, we have very bright fluorescent pink arrows.
Love route marking.
That will do your route marking, and once you see the route, you'll see that we over the 420 miles, whatever it ends up being, will end up using about 1,000 arrows.
Yeah.
So you don't go very far without seeing an arrow.
See, I'm also a little bit nervous that at some point I'm just going to revert to being a crew member, even as I'm not giving up riding. I'm just going to be so used to it, and suddenly I'm serving dinner, and I don't really understand why.
Well, that's okay, too.
And calling people hun. That was my thing about being a crew member. It's not even something I do in real life, but you get on one of these rides, and suddenly everyone is hun.
Hun, sweetie,
yeah.
You know, and it's woo-woo rider, you know. So we have, you know, it's... And people will stop at the top of hills and cheer other riders up the hill.
Nice.
You know, because we do have some hills.
Wait, what?
Yes, I know. Everybody gets so surprised when they come up, and they're like,
from
there's
Montreal
hills.
To Portland, it's going south.
And it's, yeah, towards the coast. So
it should be all downhill.
All downhill. So,
Mark, you understand that I really believe that, right?
Yeah. That's okay. We have others, too. And in your mind, if you believe it, it will be.
I just want you to understand the level of delusion that I'm entering this ride with. It helps us all be more prepared.
But if you've done the California ride, but you've crewed that
ride. I crewed it.
But that's a big ride, though.
That's a great, yeah. No, I'm so happy. You know, you get into these mindsets because there are these event production companies that are pouring a ton of money into these rides and creating these amazing, amazing experiences. You get into this mindset of, well, gosh, those must be the only game in town. And so when you have something like Charity Treks that say to people, look, there's a different way of doing this, and you can achieve the same emotions, and you can make such a sizable donation, and you can have the same personal achievement, that's so gratifying to know there are other things out there.
Oh, yes, definitely. And they're both very good in their own way.
Yeah.
And that's the one thing I tell everybody, you know, we don't want to take away from the larger events. They're just not for us.
Right.
You know, we're a different group, and you know, we want to be able to just try to do our part. And that's what it's really about. It's just giving back what we can.
What's the male female ratio?
Male female ratio is probably 60 male, 40 female.
Gotcha.
And it's a very mixed crowd.
Yeah, I actually heard that from someone, that it is, for an age ride, it's a much more mixed LGBT and ally crowd than other rides.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I would say it's almost 50-50, to be honest with you.
That's fantastic.
Now, crew leans more towards the family side,
okay,
it seems like, than the riders. But then a lot of times, like, we've got two folks that are bringing their mom and dad to do crew. So... Oh. I mean, and that's the best part of the ride, one of the best parts, is the last night we do a dinner and we have an auction to raise additional funds. And that is by far the best part of the ride, because last year, I believe we ended up raising like $16,000.
Wow.
Just at dinner. And what happens is there's always a couple quilts that are made. Some of the riders will actually make quilts and put them in the auction, and one of them last year sold for over $3,500.
Oh my gosh!
So, you know, so that's and that's where everybody gets to really relax, and then we all go out dancing, of course.
Well, come on!
At the one bar in Portland.
which actually, that's one other question that I had. Are there people from the communities that we ride through that really come out and see what's going on?
We try to get as much as we can. We go through a lot of small towns. That's another thing where we have a little different belief than some of the larger events. We try to stay away from big towns.
Mm-hmm.
On the ride. One, from a safety standpoint, but
absolutely.
Also, you know, the small towns in Vermont are just so cute.
Yes.
I mean, you go through, you can stop at a coffee shop.
Yes, we are. Yes.
You know, and it's, but we'll get some of the folks coming out at different areas, but a lot of it, our riders are from the area. Probably 30% are from the Northeast. Mm. So we do get, you know, a lot of New Hampshire folks, a few Vermont folks, more from the coast and Connecticut and things like that. But we try to get the word out more and more each year. It's just, since we're a smaller ride, like this year we'll have probably 75 riders, which is great. And it's a manageable number of, and you'll know everybody's name at the end of the ride, and you'll know their story, right, which is really important.
For the record, there is room for more riders.
Yes, there is.
Room for more crew.
Yes.
And where would folks go to learn more?
To charitytreks.org, and you can sign in right there. You can either, or my email is on there as well, and you can email me.
All right. And again, how much is the president's salary?
Zero. In fact, it's been negative the past couple years. Yes. No, we've always made a commitment as the board that if the ride costs more than we've brought in with registration or operations donations, mm-hmm, where people can give to operations, then it is up to the board to make up the difference out of their pocket.
Gotcha.
And we've done that almost every single year. And we will continue to do that because it's what we believe in.
All right, I'm not ready to be on your board yet. It's really not how you sell the board to get new people.
No, but you know, we try to, you know, try to just, if we can break even at the end of the year or come close, it's a positive for us.
And how I don't know why I'm fixated on this right this second. How do you send the money in?
You can either do it two ways. On the website, there's a donate button. Mm-hmm. When you click on that, you can either donate online. We use active.com as our donation site, or you can print a donation form and mail it in directly.
And I'm even going a step further than that. So you donate, and again, folks, because this is my interview, so you should be going to my site and donating your $10 to me. thisshowissogay.com. So someone goes on there and they donate their $10 and they do it on active.com. And then does the money go into a pool? Like, I'm just envisioning that you, Mark, get to hold a really big check and deliver it to a place.
And we do. What we do is all the money goes into an account. And at the end of the year, usually January, February of the following year, after all the monies have been, you know, allocated, we split the money up. And it can be a 50-50 split, it could be a 60-40 split. What we do is we try to base it off of how much have we raised, what the organizations, what kind of seed grants do they need, you know, what can they use, and they can always use it all.
Right.
And then we have riders from the L.A. area, and we have riders from the Atlanta area that will actually, I write out a check and mail it to them. They will get it blown up, I guess one of the big fake checks, you know. They will actually hand carry the real check to the organization, and then they will have a ceremony with the big, you know, Price is Right check.
I was just thinking Price is Right. I'm like, that makes it so Bob Barker. It's very exciting.
So, yes, we do that every year, and, you know, I try to make it to one or two of them if I can. This year I wasn't able to, but I try to go down and at least be at the presentation if I can.
Any famous people on the ride?
Not yet.
Okay.
But we may have some surprises. You never know.
All right. I'm just checking. I mean, you'll have the syndicated gay radio show host.
There you go.
That's very exciting.
We have, I mean, it is quite an interesting group of people. I mean, and the average age is probably in the 40s.
All right.
It's not a young ride. It's not a super old ride. But, you know, as the 10 years that we've been doing this, we've all kind of aged a little bit.
Yeah.
So,
I am extremely excited, mostly because I'm not on a bike right this second. But I'm extremely excited to do the ride, meet all the folks. And this is just one of those things where people, please, 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 if you have the opportunity to get involved, giving money is a great thing. I would never for a second downplay giving money if you are in the position to do it. But if you are able to volunteer with one of these rides, whether you're riding, whether you are handing out lunch, whether you're doing gear and tent, which is that's my favorite. then it's life-changing. I don't really know how else to say it. It is life-changing, as I'm sure this has been life-changing for you, Mark.
Oh, yes, most definitely. And yes. This is my August family coming up.
Give us the website one more time.
www.charitytreks.org.
There you go. Mark, an absolute pleasure having you on the show. And hey, see you in a few weeks.
Well, that's great. I'll be looking forward to it.
All right. Thanks, Mark.
All right. Bye.
Bye. I can hear the fire burning. I wish that you were mine, but I know I don't deserve it. And I'll be okay if I make it till the morning. And I want to scream it out that I'm sorry, but I'm not. No, this feeling is wrong, but I don't care. Now we're standing alone, got me out here. And I'm up so high that I can't come down. Heart, it beats so hard, yeah, it beats so loud. And I'm crying out loud. So I'm gonna keep it coming. My body's doing maximum. I know you love it. Now we got into the groove. This thing is up and running. Watch me while I'm rolling it. Baby, I'm controlling it. Work that beat. You make me feel so alive. And I'm never gonna wanna say goodbye. Wrap me up in your arms for a while. All right, and we are back, ready to welcome another guest. What a jam-packed show. What a jam-packed show tonight. Second guest, are you ready?
I'm ready.
All right, let me introduce you. Ty Koopig is the principal of Tiger Productions. That's T-Y. Oh, I just got that. It just took me till now to get that. Sorry. Little slow on the uptake. Tiger Productions, a full-service event design and management company serving corporate and private clients all over the place. He's the editor-in-chief of The Shout, and we're going to talk so much about that. And I feel that he just wants us all to be a little bit more classy. Right, Ty?
That's right.
Fresh in from P-Town, Ty Koopig, welcome to The Show Is So Gay.
Thanks so much. Yeah, right from the beach, just for you.
I love it. So do you get it, Ty? It's Tiger with a Y because it's like Ty.
Exactly. Yes. Well, you know, Ken, that was my nickname growing up. I'd get Tiger a lot. And then as I was forming my company, I thought, all right, well, what feels special to me? What, you know, is going to stand out? And I thought, well, just go with that, you know? Go with what you already have.
And it only took me 4 months to put those two things together. So
yeah,
really
I may need to work on my marketing a bit then in that case.
Well, let's start. We got to start with The Shout. We got to start with The Shout. For folks who do not know anything about it, give us the rundown.
So The Shout, and that's spelled S-H-O-W-T.
Yes.
The Shout is an online gay lifestyle magazine that I created about 7 months ago now. It's New York-based, and basically what we do is we cater to the upscale gay consumer, to the gay sophisticate, if you will.
Nice.
And we write about basically the best of New York for this fashionable, chic lifestyle. So that's everything from dining to entertainment to fashion to, you know, to everything that's happening that's kind of new, that's under the radar, especially, that you're not reading about in other publications. That's very kind of off the beaten path, if you will. And we try to be the kind of the go-to source for the hottest material and how to have a fabulous life in New York, basically.
So paint me a picture. Paint me a picture of the sophisticated gay urbanite. What is the sophisticated gay urbanite look like? Did I date him? Am I going to date him?
Well, he's definitely cute.
Cool. Okay. Just checking.
No, the sophisticated gay urbanite in our mind really is a big range. And, you know, part of the idea when I created this brand really was to look at, you know, who am I surrounded with? Who are my friends? Mm-hmm. You know, what do I like? What are we all interested in? Certainly, it represents a very diverse group of people, but I guess to distill it, we're looking and aiming at a demographic of mainly men from 30 to about 50 in age.
All right, I'm
typically,
there. We're going to do a little checkoff sheet to see if I am
okay,
if I am indeed
a
sophisticated gay urbanite.
Take notes with me, or I'm going to quiz you after.
Here we go.
Basically, successful man in the city interests in, you know, can range from the creative. We have readers who are in medicine, in finance, in the arts, in really everything. And you know, to be honest, we're getting a tremendous amount of straight following, we found, which both male and female, which wasn't even really our objective, but, you know, it's kind of a nice pat on the back that what we're doing and what we are talking about is translating to a broader audience, and that's kind of a really exciting revelation for us. We try and differentiate ourselves not only in our content, but also how we convey it. For example, we put out 2 issues a week, so it's quite a bit, on Mondays and Thursdays, Ken, and we try and keep it quick and fun because we know that our readers are working hard, they're busy, they're at the office, they're running from meeting to meeting and kind of, you know, these mavens in their industries. So everything is very digestible. You're not scrolling through pages of text.
Good.
It's, you know, basically why we think you should know about this, why you're interested, in and out, done. You know, so our readers really appreciate that, and we have a very, very strong following because of that, that come back and really are looking to us to kind of curate what they're doing on a weekly basis and what they're seeing, what they're interested in, and so it's fun.
And it is a very visual site, and I can appreciate that. I am a visual learner, so I appreciate that it is a very visual site. This is not total text-based kind of site.
Absolutely, absolutely. We do really see the value in the visual, not necessarily from a just sex sell standpoint, although that's very true, and everyone likes looking at a cute guy. But basically, you know, it's another way of conveying the spirit of what we're writing about. So an example, Ken, of this is with a lot of the interviews that we do with local celebrities, with emerging artists, with emerging recording artists. We oftentimes really pull with our resources in New York with top photographers to get kind of exclusives. And so what we've done, for example, with a singer named Oland, who's actually kind of blown up in the U.S. coincidentally after we originally featured her, is we did an exclusive photo shoot with her.
Great.
Through an amazing photographer in the city by the name of Vito Fun. So we really try to, you know, to give something special to our readers, not just the story, but an experience. Or, you know, in that case, it was a great example of informing our readers of this emerging singer who, coincidentally, weeks later, you know, suddenly all her songs were all over the radio, or, you know, she was performing at everything. She's on commercials, you know, so they get kind of the inside scoop and you know, frankly, have the cool thing to talk about at, you know, at the office before anyone else does.
We can put coincidentally in air quotes. I'm fine with that. We could say coincidentally she blew up after she was on our site. We're fine with that.
You know, I'm sure it's not related at all. Wink, wink.
I'm sure they have nothing to do with each other.
I can only hope.
Now, you do have, I can only assume, and I'm feeling pretty confident in this, that you have subscribers outside of New York.
We do, absolutely. And what we do is, I would say 75% of what we write is New York-based. You know, the rest is national. It's general interest for the demographic that we are targeting.
Mm-hmm.
So we find that we have readers all over the U.S. We have readers in South America, in Europe,
nice.
And in Asia, which I found out recently, which is super exciting.
That's very exciting.
Yeah, and our idea, Ken, is to certainly grow the brand, if you will, and kind of venture into other cities, both in the U.S. and abroad, as the shout grows and gets that much more powerful. But the idea really is to also keep, you know, kind of our feet set firmly on the ground in the city that we're talking about. So, for example, in New York, in our hometown, we don't want to grow too quickly. We want to make sure that what we're writing about is still has the value, still has the validity, and is still ahead of the curve, rather than become just a resource that's reporting on information that you can get anywhere. Because then we really lose, you know, what we're trying to do, what we're trying to accomplish.
I will say that I do feel that Vermont is an untapped market for the sophisticated gay urbanite. And so please come here because I'm very lonely.
Absolutely. Well, we're going to need to visit up. And, you know, something actually, coincidentally, that as you say, that's something we're going to start looking at is tapping into, you know, there's seven cities in the U.S. that basically everyone in press focuses on. So that's New York, Chicago, Miami, L.A., San Francisco, and so on. What we'd like to do is start doing some issues on smaller towns, smaller cities that have large gay communities but sometimes fall under the radar and have amazing culture or have amazing arts or activities. So, you know, Vermont is an example. We're going to do something in Oregon coming up.
Nice.
So actually, that's something we should definitely follow up with, and we'll have to do it. You'll have to give me all the inside scoops on what's happening there.
Yeah, I got nothing. Anyway, that was fun to dream for a couple seconds, wasn't it?
Sure.
That was good times. I love, my favorite quote on the site is just, "Dare to live beyond expectations. The reward is as exhilarating as retail therapy." It's good stuff.
Better than retail therapy. That's tough.
It's tough.
Setting a high bar.
I'm telling you, and we got some outlets near here, so it's good stuff. It's good stuff. Now, you also do a lot of benefit work with The Shout.
We do. Basically, as we saw our popularity and our kind of status in the community growing very quickly, it really made sense to use The Shout also as a platform for fundraising, for charitable causes, and we work with a number, both gay and more general causes, including GLAAD, the Trevor Project, the American Cancer Society, GMHC, really, you know, you name it, and we don't necessarily favoritize, but I see it really as our responsibility, and more personally as my responsibility as, you know, as a gay man in New York, to anything I can do to help, and any way I can use The Shout as an even more efficient way of helping the community, of supporting. It's something that's very, you know, that I think is very important. And so I'm very, very happy and feel blessed that I can do that, and that The Shout's allowing me to do more and kind of get more stories out, let people know about upcoming events, about fundraisers, and so it's great.
Now, I will challenge you on one of those points, because you did say as a gay man in New York, and indeed you are working in New York, but I heard a vicious, vicious, mean-spirited rumor that perhaps you might have set up shop in a different state.
Well, you were scaring me. I wasn't sure what that rumor was going to be.
I love the part where you just ran through all the different things you've done in the past couple. Oh, crap. I was on P-Town. What did he hear? But I heard a vicious rumor. It was mean-spirited, really, that perhaps your living situation might be elsewhere.
Well, if that's the worst that people are saying about me, then I feel that I'm very happy. No, that's true. I moved out to Greenwich, Connecticut in the last year after about 12 years in Manhattan, and I'm loving it. And, you know, it's to be determined if it's permanent, but for now, it's a wonderful way of working and kind of getting a removal from the city. I'm in the city about 5 days a week anyway, between business and social and all the fundraising and all of that. But I have a tree. I have a little bit of grass. It's a very different experience than living in Manhattan.
Absolutely.
But I really, you know, there's a lot of perks to it, and I have to say it's a lot more relaxing.
Yeah, no, as someone who moved out of Manhattan not that long ago, it's an ever-growing adjustment, but it's a good thing. It can be a good thing.
It is. Yeah, I like the balance. Absolutely.
Perspective. We love perspective.
You know what? That's right.
All right, I want to talk about Tiger Productions, and by the way, that's T-Y, if you haven't been listening. Now, what about that kind of work jazzes you up?
That's right. Well, so Tiger Productions, TYGR, is my special events company, and what we focus on is mainly corporate events. I've had the company for about 3 years now, and I've been in the business for about 11 years, basically since I originally came to New York. And I studied architecture at Columbia and then went into special events. And basically, Tiger Productions is on the corporate side, we handle financial clients, luxury goods companies, and really everything in between on that side. And our events can range from a 12-guest VIP dinner for the head of a bank to a 2,000-guest event.
Yeah.
Some of the larger ones we've done have been Broadway openings. For example, My company's handled the openings for Disney in the last couple of years, for Tarzan, for Mary Poppins, for The Little Mermaid. I've worked on all of those projects. So it's really wonderful. It's a wonderful area to work, and I really do enjoy the industry. And so in addition to that, we bring in the charitable causes as well, and do some fundraising galas, as well as some private work. So certainly anyone, for a private or a corporate company, anyone who's looking can certainly reach out to us.
Great. Now, do I lose my status? And by the way, look how quickly I've just co-opted the status. Do I lose my status as a sophisticated gay urbanite if I admit on the air that I really enjoyed Tarzan the musical?
No, you know what?
I liked it.
Hey, I liked him, so I think we're...
Oh, was there more than that? I didn't see anything else.
He was
upside
there
down.
There may have been some other actors on stage. All I saw was him swinging around on bungee cords.
I assume there were puppets or something. I just was on him. That was fine.
You know what? No, we'll that'll be between you, me, and all your listeners.
We'll just put that out there. So now let's do this. Coolest event that you have produced.
The coolest event that I've produced, I think, you know, my favorite was the opening for The Little Mermaid, and that was a couple of years ago now. Really incredible event, not only because of the scale, but just because of the transformation of the space. Did it at Roseland Ballroom, which is in the heart of the theater district in New York, if anyone is, you know, familiar, but it's a pretty dilapidated space.
Yes, it
hosts a lot of concerts, as well as the Black Party, which is a pretty large gay event in New York, and it's kind of at the opposite end of the spectrum from anything you would think of as Disney. So to transform that space into something appropriate and to the level that that Disney really requires was quite a challenge, but it was a very, very fun one, and taking such a dynamic and beautiful show and translating that to an event to basically celebrate the production without repeating any of the themes, without using any of the props, anything like that, was great. It was difficult, but it was very fun. And basically what we did is we took this blank, dilapidated, huge kind of ballroom that was kind of crumbly and black, and transformed the whole thing, draped it in dark blues, had moving lights, and all the centerpieces were made out of huge kind of glowing shells, and the whole space kind of took on an underwater feeling.
Cool.
So it was an event that's very close to my heart, and I was very, very proud of.
Now, of course, on the other side of the spectrum, how about, and we can do broad strokes on this, how about the event that just didn't turn out the way that you wanted, but you, of course, learned from it?
You always look at, in the event industry, I've learned to always think about, all right, what can go wrong? Because something always will,
right?
And that's I think, what separates the good events from the bad, is how do you figure out what, you know, where are the risks, and how do you kind of plan in advance? And also, how do you keep the client from being affected in any way? That's the top priority, is that the client has a successful event.
Right.
So if the kitchen's on flames and on fire, as long as everyone's still enjoying their dinner and they don't see the smoke, then
right,
it doesn't exist. Then it doesn't then it doesn't matter for them, but I'm, you know, slowly ready to jump out a window.
And if they do see it, they get excited for the flambé dessert. You can sell it.
Well, you know, at a lot of events, it's always kind of fun when someone has an allergic reaction, as long as it's not, you know, deathly, because you get a little bit of drama, and so it's a good time. It's entertainment in itself. But I think, in my work, it's been weather-related. It's been with storms, where it's out of your control. I did a wedding this past summer in upstate Massachusetts. Beautiful property, beautiful tent, very high budget, and there was probably one of the biggest hurricanes they've had in years. And so the guests were happy. We just, you know, got them drinking. We moved them from one tent to another as kind of one started becoming less stable and rain was coming in. And it's kind of the situation where everything is pushed to the limit, and you just have to figure out, you know, on your feet how to keep everyone happy and how to keep the party going. And at the end of it, I talked to the bride that night, and then the next day, and she said, "Ty, I'm so glad that everything happened as it did because it made it that much more memorable, and it wasn't just another great wedding. It was an incredible experience for her and for her guests. It's a story. So, you know, while there were downsides to it, it ended up actually being a positive.
Love it. And you produced that event. She will always remember you.
That's right. That's right.
That's awesome. All right. Well, we do have to talk about your musical selections for this evening.
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, boy. So this is the part of the show, Ty, where you tell our listening audience what some of these – I don't know that we're going to get to all of them, and I know that you put so much thought into these, so let's see what we can pull off. You're going to tell our listening audience what some of these musical selections say about Ty Kupig.
Okay.
There's a little self-analysis going on here. You ready?
All right.
Okay. What do you want to start with? I'm definitely going to be playing this one. What does Kylie's Aphrodite say about Ty?
I knew you were going to start with that one, Ken. You know, Kylie Minogue has always been one of my favorite artists.
Love her.
Love her. And, I really have issues with anyone who says she's not talented, or they don't get why she's big. She's, I think, a genius. And so I've been listening to her for a long time and really going to her concerts for a number of years now. Aphrodite, I went to her most recent concert in New York at Hammerstein Ballroom, and she opened the show with that, she put on an incredible performance, great song, but it's just, the visuals, the way of creating an experience for the guests, I thought was, for the attendees, was really incredible. And something I like about her as a singer is just, is that she constantly changes, and she certainly isn't afraid to use her sex appeal in any way, but she keeps it light, she keeps it fun, and she always, keeps it interesting and kind of remembers how to entertain her fans. And I think that's a really important, a really important thing. So that was kind of what was falling behind that.
Nice. Good. That was good. All right. I'm going to make you do another one. Because
okay.
I didn't know. See, you definitely chose some songs that I don't know. What does Little Boots' Mathematics say about Ty?
What does it say about me?
Yeah.
Well, it is a pop song, and so I don't know that there's, hopefully I have a bit more depth than this song. But, this is really one of my favorite songs. Little Boots was one of these great finds that came about 2 years ago, and she, a British singer who has now since kind of blown up in the U.S., just a great song, still one that most people who know Little Boots, they don't know this song, Mathematics. Just something really fun, really good for summer, while you're barbecuing, kind of light, easy to listen to, and anything, I'm a sucker for love, I'm a sucker for, anything romantic. There's a little bit of a silly romantic element to it, so nice. I have to like it.
Nice. All right. I will make you do one more, because I feel this last minute switch was indicative of something really important. So we're going to find out. I feel like something happened. Something happened. And
sure.
Let's find out. What does Don't Stop Me by Winter Gordon say about Ty?
Well, Winter Gordon is actually a new artist who we featured in the Shout a couple weeks ago. Since then, she was booked to open and to perform at New York Pride.
Coincidentally, in air quotes.
Coincidentally. I just, I don't know. Something's in the air. Something happens.
Nice.
As soon as I listened to her album before it was released, I really loved it. Loved what she's doing. I think an incredible singer, incredible attitude, and a great performer. So this song I put down, Ken, because A, love the song as it is, but B, also just, it was my first New York Pride this year that I ever went to after 12 years in New York. So it was definitely a meaningful experience, something really I suggest everyone go to at least once in their lives. It's a really fun time. So she performed at Pier Dance, and it was just, it was a really wonderful experience and a memorable time for me. So I had to put this song down, something that's been on my mind since.
Coincidentally.
And then, by the way,
I think there's going to be a big run on bags made out of condoms. I think that's coming up.
All right, well, just always make sure to check the expiration date on your condom bags, that's all.
I'm just putting that out there. I hear that it could make a nice toiletry bag. I heard that
around. It could. Well, clearly you're reading the show.
Not so much in Greenwich, Connecticut, but, you know, elsewhere it could be. Now, where can
I would say keep it in the city, yeah.
Yeah. Where can folks go to learn more about all these cool things that you're doing?
Well, everyone can go to www.shout, that's theshout.com, and that's for, and you can subscribe to the Shout and become a member. I highly suggest it. And also find us on Facebook and like us. You can also visit my event company, Tiger Productions. That's TYGER Productions.com, and we're also on Facebook. And and if anyone has any comments or suggestions or things they'd like to hear about or have us write about for the Shout, they can reach out to me on Facebook, or they can do it through our website.
Awesome. It sounds good. And they can see what a good time that you had on at NP Town.
Exactly. And they can see all the photos.
All right. So I know that I'm in Vermont, and it's 3 hours from New York City, but I'm between the ages of 30 and 50, and I'm somewhat successful. Can I be an honorary, sophisticated gay urbanite?
You can. Absolutely. You're going to be at the top of the list. And when you come and visit us in New York, you're going to get a big big gold star.
Nice. Because I'm there like every, 3 weeks, and I want the gold star.
Well, you have to do it. And you know what, Ken? We're going to have a big event for the Shout, an end-of-summer party in New York.
Awesome.
In late August. We don't have a date set down in stone yet, but it'll be late August. Will be a blowout event. And so I expect you and as many of your listeners as possible to be there. And all the details will be put up on our Facebook page for the Shout, and also on our website in the next couple weeks.
Well, maybe we'll do a little This Show Is So Gay broadcast right from the party.
I would love to do it.
Awesome. Ty, what an absolute pleasure having you on the show. I love that you're just putting out there so much creativity that folks can latch onto and do even more exploration of themselves in New York and everywhere they're living than they're already doing. It's a great thing.
Well, Ken, I really appreciate it. Thanks for having me. And I love the show. And let's do it again soon.
Keep doing what you're doing, Ty.
You too.
All right. All the best.
Okay.
Thank you, sir.
Understood what was the missing link, and by the time I calculated the correct solution, the question had escaped me, and so did the conclusion. So tell me, everything must always be true, or nothing else is true, and I'll believe you, 'cause your X is equal to me.
And sadly, that brings us to the close of yet another This Show Is So Gay, but fear not. Another episode next week, and we'll be together again like a family. And like a family, hey, get in touch with us. Drop us an email at thisshowissogay@AOL.com. If you have any guest ideas or you have any feedback or you have any suggestions, anything you got, write us an email, thisshowissogay@AOL.com. We will, of course, respond to you. Come on, we respond to every email. We do that. We're that kind of family. Over at thisshowissogay.com, you can listen to past shows. You can check out upcoming guests. You can learn more about the co-host. I swear, co-hosts, they're coming back to the show. They are. It's not just going to be Ken anymore. We're bringing back the other co-hosts. So do that, and it gives you a link to subscribe on iTunes, and that makes your This Show Is So Gay listening experience that much easier, because it'll just download automatically to your iTunes. And of course, if you're on the Facebook, and I suspect that you are, type in This Show Is So Gay, then just click like. It takes a half second, if that. Like us, because we sure as heck like you. So get out there, folks. Again, if you have the opportunity to do a ride, one of these AIDS rides, I urge you to do it. Whether you're crewing it, I started out as a crew member. It took me 8 years to actually sign up as being a rider. So don't feel like you need to ride. Crew member, unbelievably, unbelievably fulfilling. And go check out theshout.com. They are doing some great things over there. I love checking it out. It is a visual whirlwind tour of all that's interesting, everything that's going on in that lifestyle. So go do some amazing things. And when you're out there doing your amazing things, remember, why be gay when you can be so gay?
So you